Sit on, and I will say that my name is Chris Bell, and today's date is the 31st
of August,
1983, and I'm speaking with Mr. Corker at his home in Oak Bay. And, sir, last day, we were talking about your time in the prison camp, and we were more or less discussing conditions. We hadn't got onto your escape, and I think we were talking about why you did escape.
Yeah.
And, interestingly enough, you had said that Germans wouldn't penalize you more than the required amount, which even right now strikes me as being silly on their part, because it wouldn't instill any sense of fear in you. They changed that later on, though, didn't they? Because the prisoners were escaping so much.
No, you mean they got more severe?
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Not at all?
No. No, they stuck to the rules that they made. They have a kind of a set of rules for everything, and they stuck to them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there were, yes. I'll tell you what they did do. It wasn't so much the people that escaped, but it was the people that refused to work, and maybe they caught on a bit to their sabotaging.
Mm-hmm.
So when people refused to work, or when they were sent back for not working well, they were sent to punishment camps.
Mm-hmm.
Where they made it tough, you know. You didn't get your parcels.
Did you go to a prison camp?
And you got poor food, and you couldn't play games or anything. It was more or less like being in prison.
Yeah.
Not a Canadian person. The Canadian person, you get everything apparently.
Yeah.
even colored television.
Yeah. Even conjugal visits from their wives too. Were you ever in one of these detention centers?
I was sent to one of them for 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it was tough. But I can't remember anybody being struck.
I guess rations were cut down, and you were kept by yourself.
Life was made miserable. That's what they did.
Yeah.
But that was the only one I was sent to. But it was miserable. I was glad to get out of it.
Well, tell me about your first escape attempt.
The first time we attempted to escape was just after those nice clothes that you see in that photograph in that book,
mm-hmm.
Came. And we thought they would be very good to go out in, mm-hmm. dressed in, because they were dark clothes, and the Germans were quite fond of dark clothes, civilians. And three of us discussed it, and we decided that we were working on the parcels that were coming in, you see. And it was quite easy to escape from there because of the confusion of loading these parcels. They just started, red cross parcels, so lots of parcels were coming in, and the Germans hadn't really got it down to a system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had no difficulty in jumping a fence there. There were no barbed wire and no guards.
Mm-hmm.
But we were only out a very short time. We were out about 3 days, and it was in the winter time, just around Christmas. And we made some progress, and we learned a few things. And then we started to, and we didn't have a good map,
mm-hmm.
and we had a very poor compass, and we didn't have the right kind of food. We took canned stuff. The canned stuff is heavy, and it's hard to heat it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not very pleasant eating canned stuff cold. Mm-hmm. But biscuits and chocolate. Chocolate is a very, lots of calories in chocolate. And biscuits are good, easy to eat.
Mm-hmm. Quiet, they don't clang around in the night.
And we also thought that it might be a good idea to take tea, if you could cook it up in a small pot, you see, and you get something hot.
Mm-hmm.
And about the third or fourth attempt, we were able to get crème de menthe. The French got it. I don't know how they got it. Now, if you take that stuff and you have about a thimbleful,
mm-hmm.
it's really a liqueur.
Yeah.
And if you take a thimbleful, it's just about as good as taking a glass of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. So we nearly always took it if we could get it.
Just to clear your mind and steal yourself.
And, well, it, you know, the very first thing we did when we got to the France and went in the trenches, they used to issue us a rum ration mm-hmm. every morning.
Someone told me they issued a double rum ration on the day of an offensive.
No, I know, I don't remember that they did that.
I think that came later in the war.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember that. We got rations, all right. The department, the transport officer managed to get things up to the front, but it was sketchy, you know, and it was tough job. Everybody was moving around. They hardly knew where anybody was.
Yeah. And what was the bombardment and the conditions that you had to traverse the supplies on? Very difficult.
You see, he said in his letter there that I said the number one company was moved up. I guess maybe I was wrong. It should have been one of the other companies. But I didn't really know. You see, we weren't with any of the companies.
Mm-hmm. You were detached?
We were sent up to these crossroads at Castellier.
Well, that's what they did with machine gun companies, didn't they? They broke them up and
yeah. We got rations, we got a rum ration, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember it being double.
I think that the Brits did that to their soldiers on the Somme and in Passchendaele, specifically.
Mm-hmm. It was very unfortunate about the rifles. Now, I can sympathize with Colonel Sam Hughes, because he had to get together an army in a very short time, when you really can't do it,
mm-hmm.
not properly.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of the equipment we were given, we threw away when we got to England. They supplied us with web equipment, and we had this, all of our equipment here, it was leather.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was like being harnessed up like a horse. But leather, you see, they had lots of leather in Canada, and they were able to make this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any webbing companies. And then the Ross rifle, I suppose Ross was probably a friend of the government and he got a contract for it.
Probably more so than anything else. And the fact that he was Canadian. And, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So you can, in a way, you can hardly blame him, but it would have been better to have got all the Enfield rifles that we had in Canada. We must have had enough to
take care of the 30,000.
Putting from the militia regiments.
And look at it this way, by the time you got to Britain and mm-hmm. had been trained over a few months, you would have got the Lee Enfield rifle, the new one anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when a thing, in a case like that, it's a very difficult thing to do. It's like forming a company now and building a factory and getting it going.
Yeah.
Because everything started for probably maybe a couple of years before they started.
But nowhere in the entire world had anything like this ever happened before. Mm. This was the first time something like this on this scale had happened across an entire ocean. It was a phenomenal move on the Canadian part, it truly was.
But to get back to the escaping, you see, about this time, after the second attempt, we formed this You Know What Society.
Mm-hmm.
For the purpose of getting organized, just the very thing we're talking about, getting organized, because we could see the way we were going about it, we wouldn't, it was a haphazard business. So we pooled our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to get a map of West Germany
mm-hmm.
from the French,
that
it was all divided up. There's the big map. It was divided up into pieces about that big.
Mm-hmm.
Sections, you see, and if you were sent to a place like here and the border was here, you'd get these three sections. Now, I had two of them, but I lost them. You'd have to draw your own map.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had no way of copying it. So we used to use the paper that biscuits were wrapped up in. They were wrapped up in a kind of a wax paper that was transparent, and you could
mm-hmm.
trace a map on it.
Did they not give you toilet paper or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
No toilet paper to use?
No, it's hard to get paper in Germany.
Yeah.
But that's what we use, this biscuit paper. It was a kind of a wax paper like you buy already made, but of course they'd use it to wrap around things that, to keep them fresh.
Yeah.
So we were able to draw these maps, these little sections.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you this? Did the You Know What Society, would they tell people that they could or could not escape? Like, was it an escape of committee like we see in films?
I didn't get that.
Okay, the You Know What Society.
Yeah.
Was it an escape committee?
Yes.
Like they have in the films where they tell a person or a group of people they can escape or can't escape?
Well, there were some members of it that didn't try to escape because of maybe they weren't physically well, but they were intelligent and were able to
help them out.
Hold the stuff that we had collected in the barracks, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Had we all been escapees, then who would we have left the stuff with? We'd have had to leave it with somebody that maybe we didn't want to know. We didn't want them to know anything about her.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two fellows that stayed in camp that held their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We collected maps and we compasses and drugs and bandages and things like that. We made up a little first aid kit.
Mm-hmm.
And anything like that that we thought the prisoners might want. And then they also knew about the general procedure, you see, where to, how to proceed. It was best not to go on any main roads.
Mm-hmm.
You had to try and keep to the side roads.
Mm-hmm.
And cross country where you could. Things like that. And then, of course, another thing too, if you knew a little German, you could say good evening if you met somebody, some in fairly good German.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be much more likely to get away without them being suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Were you told to stick to roads or to stick to the trees?
That's right. We suggested that. You see, it was up to the people that were escaping
mm-hmm.
to do what they thought was best.
Yeah.
But we told them what happened when we...
And you got back from your tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we warned them of the things we'd found that we'd done wrong.
Mm-hmm. Besides yourself, did a lot of other prisoners try and escape as well?
Oh, yes, a lot. I'll show you something. Oh, yes, a lot of, especially Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And so did the Russians, but of course they couldn't get anywhere because they hadn't got the equipment we had and knowledge. I'm afraid that this isn't very orderly, but now this is the supplement to the London Gazette.
In 1920.
Yeah.
That's January 30th, 1920.
1920, mm-hmm. 3 years after the war. Canadian Force. His Majesty the King has been graciously pleased to approve of the undermentioned rewards to recognition of gallant conduct and determination displayed in escaping or attempting to escape in captivity, which services have been brought to the notice in accordance with the terms of Army Order 193. You see, now those are the Canadians. Now, I know in many of these, there's Candy. Cameron was the man that escaped with me.
Mm-hmm.
Corker. Canyon. Driver. Spears. All these men I knew.
At Giessen itself?
But that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At Giessen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and you should see that list there.
Mm-hmm.
All these fellows were given the MM.
For escaping from...
For trying to escape or organizing for escapes.
Hmm.
See, when they sent me, there's the letter they sent to me. I beg to enclose here with the marginally named decoration awarded you by His Majesty. But they didn't say why.
Mm-hmm. What was the date on it? April 21st, 1920.
You see, they didn't say why, so...
You just sort of got the medal in the mail and...
Just in registered my name. So, I finally wrote to the London Gazette, and I wrote to the militia here first, and they told me to write to the Gazette, and they sent me a copy of this. Mm-hmm. But usually, you see, when you get a medal, you get there's a reason. There's a quotation from this thing with it to show you what it's for.
Yeah. But there's nothing to indicate precisely what has happened. I suppose after the war they got a list of those who escaped.
That's
and
right.
Said, all right, we'll grant them the military medal. We deem that this is valid to do this. Well, I suppose in respect, or looking back and using perspective, that was a fine thing to have done. Because undoubtedly you earned it. And were deserving of the military medal.
Mm. I didn't get quite catch what you said.
Well, I just said that using perspective, you probably were deserving of getting the medal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that was a surprise to me. I didn't know anything about it, but this fellow Durand, I think he was the one that must have given a lot of the information about the fellows at Giessen, but then, you see, there are a lot of others that weren't at Giessen. They were in other camps.
Mm-hmm.
I have a book downstairs written by another fellow in the 7th Battalion who also escaped. He was a Giessen for a little while, but he was sent to another camp.
Who was he?
Howland.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in Vancouver.
He wrote a book too, did he?
Yeah, he wrote a book. I think he paid for the...
I'll put it on hold and I'll wait.
I'll get it afterwards.
Okay, great. I'd like to see it. But you escaped 6 times before you actually made it out. Why did you keep going? Weren't you discouraged by your failure?
Well, you know, I'm a persistent bugger, you know. No, I wasn't discouraged.
Did you decide, okay, that failed, I'll try something else?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're constantly thinking?
Just like, you're a prisoner anyway. There was nothing to lose by not trying to escape.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was determined to get out if I could. I was going to keep on trying. And I'll tell you a little story about one place that I'd escaped from, you see. And I got very close to the border that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans, you see, they always had little dodges of trying to control you.
Mm-hmm.
They thought if they sent me back to this place, the Germans in charge would give me a rough time, you see, and maybe it'd scare me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got down there with my bag, stuff, grub, that's all packed with grub. And the first thing that the sergeant in charge did was to smack me across the face.
With his hand or his rifle?
And then they talked for a little while, and then he said, well, now, will you escape again? I said, what do you think? I said, you just smacked me across the face now, you figure it out. I'd already figured out how I was going to escape that night. He sent me right back to Giessen. No, he was scared, yes. I guess they got...
Well, they couldn't do anything with you, so they had to get rid of you or else you'd escape from them, wouldn't you?
But I, of course, you know, when I got smacked, I was mad because there was no reason to do that. I'd done my punishment.
Yeah. He was trying to put you in your place, supposedly.
But I had, you know, we didn't go right straight to the sergeant. We went in and was shown where we were to sleep, and then they brought me back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the way, I'd seen where I could get out. So I would have gone that night, if they'd, unless they'd put a guard on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no chance. Well, tell me something. As you progressed, did your escape plans become more sophisticated? Like, did you have to think them out more? And because of the first failure, well, I won't do this a second time, or I'll do this differently. Things became more sophisticated.
Well, of course, you had to be guided. But it's a sort of catch as catch can kind of business. You know, you didn't know what you're going to be up against.
Yeah. Question of luck was involved.
And you just had to eat as each problem arose. You had to figure out what to do about it. But there's one thing. The last time, you see, previously we'd escaped like gentlemen. We played the game like cricket, and if we were caught, we were caught. But we decided the last time that we would put a fight up, because the previous times we could have. I could have probably given a German a wallop and run for it. I was twice on the border, you see.
Border of Switzerland, Germany.
So this, yeah, the border between Germany and Holland.
Holland.
So this this time we decided that we would, that's what we would do. We would try and hit him, or try something to get him, not give in.
Yeah.
And this fellow Kenyon that I was talking about, they made a plan, you see, similar but not like ours. They made a plan that one would try and keep the attention of the guard and the other fellow would go away. And Kenyon got over and the fellow that he was with was captured. So it was one of those, it is not a escaping, isn't a science. It's a haphazard kind of an operation, and you can never tell what you're going to do or how the Germans are going to act.
You think it could have been cut down, the number of escapes, if the Germans had taken more time in constructing their camps and putting more men around the camps? Because you describe it, and the picture rather shows that it was almost a loosely organized prison camp.
Yeah. Well, you see, we only escaped once from the prison camp.
You were on commando the other time?
All the other time, we were out working.
Yeah.
Well, when you're out working, well, they do have guards there. They couldn't afford to have, there might be 50 persons working there. They couldn't afford to have more than two or three guards.
Would they be older men too, the guards?
Well, they were all older men, and they were all armed with the old rifle that they used in the War of 1870 against France.
Really? They
looked like a shotgun.
So one shot with those and you'd have an hour while they reloaded, right?
Boy, one shot, it'd blow you all to pieces.
If they got within 5 feet of you, perhaps.
Yeah.
Those big things. You liked being out on commando, didn't you? So did you like being out on commando?
Well,
aside from the fact that it would offer you a means of escape.
My main object once I got out was to escape, so that's what first thing I used to do was to size up with the situation, how I could escape and when and what I needed and all the rest of it, you see. I'd planned it. Just the minute I got there, I could plan it. Now, one place I went to was a place called Herder. And this fellow, Cleeton, that lives up here, he also worked there. So it was a great big iron foundry about 100 kilometers from Holland. But it was a tough place, oh boy. And working in an iron foundry when you're not used to it, you know, is...
The heat, they say, is enough after half an hour just to wipe any man who's never done it before out.
Yeah. So I wasn't going to stay there, and I couldn't... You couldn't go sick, and you couldn't refuse to work. They just shoot you there from there. So I found a way I could get out of the factory, and during the coffee break, you could go in and get your food where you left it. And so I just went out of the window and left. But I was poorly organized, so I didn't get very far. I didn't have enough food to last, and the main idea was to get away from this iron foundry. They were bad places to work.
Would it be the soldiers and the guards who were cruel, or the actual German civilians who were running the...
Well, the iron foundries, you see, are almost like a prison in themselves because they have big...
They're all enclosed, isn't it?
Yeah, they're closed in with the fence.
Yeah.
And you... the minute, if you weren't there, you see, the minute you weren't there doing your job, you know, like a factory is, they have a kind of an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody is missing, why...
Their job
is you're noticed done. Immediately.
Yeah.
And of course, you'd be reported, and they'd start looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
See, at that time, the Germans weren't... they were getting pretty fed up with the working long hours and not winning the wars, either. And so they had a few men around watching them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this time the German people were getting quite unhappy about the war.
But other times the first place we went to was a stone quarry, and the second place we went to was this big job down near mines, putting in this log.
Mm-hmm.
on the River Main. It flowed into the Rhine there.
Mm-hmm.
And the third place was this place where they had the wine, and then I went down to a farm, and then I went to another farm. Oh, that's the final one where I escaped from.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only Canadian or English-speaking prisoner there. All the rest were French. But these other fellows,
mm-hmm.
we were allowed a certain amount of freedom, you see, so I could go over and visit this other fellow. They told me about this other Canadian. So I went over to see him, and this was Cameron.
Cameron,
and he'd been there for a couple of years. He knew all the Germans. He could just walk everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Had he thought of escaping?
No, he never thought about it. But when I talked to him, he said, "Why, he'd love to." So, so we did.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get out of my place, and he had to get out of his. But there was no problem there because he was pretty well free.
Mm-hmm.
I had to fix a lock so that I could open a door at night, maybe say about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And then I went into this next room where there was sort of a little storeroom, and there was a telephone pole. You know, the streets in Germany don't go straight.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the telephone pole would be right up close against the building.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was right outside. I just had to step out onto it and go down with all my stuff, a full back, everything.
Mm-hmm. How far did you get?
I mean, let's get over it.
Yeah, I mean, how far did you get in your escape attempt?
Was
this the successful escape?
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, tell me all about that now. What happened after you got down the pole?
Well, the Frenchman also met us.
Mm-hmm. So there are three of you, Cameron, you, and the Frenchman.
So we walked about 3 days. How many days were we on the trip? I forget now.
In minutes?
But anyway, we were 21 days on the trip. I was down to about 120 pounds.
You couldn't find anything on the countryside deep near that?
So we were very careful. You
mm-hmm.
see, we wouldn't take chances, any chances, whatever.
If so you stuck to the trees during the day?
That's right. We stuck to the trees and the back roads.
Mm-hmm.
And after about the fourth day, the Frenchman quit. That's what made it tough, you see. He took all the biscuits. We just had chocolate and...
He said, "I'm not going to go any farther. I'm going to give myself up." And he took all his biscuits with him.
Yeah.
Why didn't you hit him on the head and take his biscuits from him?
Well, I don't know how it was. Well, I think he just helped himself, you see, from our kids.
Oh, and he just took off?
Yeah, when he took off.
Oh.
He went off at night when we were asleep. And that's within the summertime, you see, so it was very good, nice warm weather.
Mm-hmm.
Then my... Chum and I, we had to wade through two or three streams, and our feet got wet, and then we walked until our shoes, our socks were dry, and we got burnt feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that the best thing to do was to lay up for a day. So we found a nice, quiet little place hidden by woods, and we just stayed there all day. And there was enough space where you could sit in the sun and get sunburned. And we took our socks off, and we never thought about washing them.
Mm-hmm.
And let them get thoroughly dry, and our shoes got good and dry, and our feet had a good rest.
Mm-hmm.
And we urinated on them. Have you ever heard of that?
On shoes?
Not on shoes, on feet.
No.
You ever, I've been on a laboring job where I've seen them urinate on their hands to save them from getting blisters.
Well, how does it help them?
I don't know. Don't ask me, but they do it.
Yeah, and you guys did it too.
And so
let me ask you a dumb question. Did you do it on your own shoes, or did you pee on each other's feet?
No, we did. We peed on our own feet.
Yeah. Cause,
and it worked.
Well, logistically, it seems, I guess you could.
It worked. It sure worked.
It helped it.
Well, of course, I don't know whether it was the urine that did it.
Mm-hmm.
It has an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether they just got better by themselves. But anyway, we tried it, and we went after a day's rest, we were fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 4 days, we were at the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now the border, the Germans, of course, were getting short of food. And I don't know, in the early days, when I got in the border, I couldn't remember any planting in between the actual border and where the guards were.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kind of a
column of
corridor, you know.
Yeah.
But here the corridor was growing with turnips, and the tops were up about 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that we'd crawl through it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Which we did. But we were a little bit afraid of the moon. It came out for a while and we stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went in, and then we went right. We got over without any trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you know, we were in this place, Sittard.
Which is just across the border into Holland.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they had no guards on there. At least we didn't see any.
Mm-hmm. Well, were the Dutch pro-German, or were they straight neutral?
Hmm?
The Dutch were neutral, weren't they?
They were neutral in that war, yeah.
Were they pro-German at all in their neutrality?
Some were pro-German and some were pro-English.
So it was a mixture of things. Okay. So you were welcomed, and you were probably interned.
Oh, yes. We were treated very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally went to the police office.